Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+, and we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Slowly coming to life here as Super Bowl week unfolds. We're at the New Orleans Super Bowl Host Committee Media Center, as you just heard. And it's going to be a big week. The whole station's going to be here all week long, and we'll have all types of NFL players and higher-ups and everything else as they walk by. It happens every time the Super Bowl is in town. So if you can, get out and walk around the city, take advantage of a lot of the stuff that's going on. And the last time I think I did it, it was a while ago, but I think Denver was playing the 49ers in the Super Bowl. Yeah, I didn't buy a drink the entire time I was in the French Quarter. But on to more serious stuff, Shem Malmquist joins us now, a visiting instructor at the Florida Institute of Technology and a pilot for over 35 years, to talk about what we know about that aircraft, the two aircraft that collided and plunged into the Potomac last week. Good morning, Captain. How are you?
Good morning. Good. How are you?
I'm okay, sir. Let me take a step back, if I can, and talk about just the unparalleled safety of air travel in this country, and how that really was what happened was an anomaly on last week. Talk about that, if you would, please.
Well, fortunately, that's very true. We have had an exemplary safety record, and flying continues to be extremely safe, of course. You know, but, of course, on the other side, we have seen a some close calls, I guess you could say, over the last couple of years. And so that is something that many of us have been concerned about and watching. But even so, I mean, you know, a close call is a close call. You know, if they say that, you know, close only matters in horseshoes and hand grenades. And in this case, we have, you know, an extremely safe system. And a lot of that safety is because, and even with these close calls that have occurred, people have been able to intervene and keep it safe in the face of, you know, some pretty close calls and other events happening.
What do we know now that we didn't know last week?
Well, there's a bit that has come up. So we know that the helicopters are on a extremely important national security mission of where they are. They run very defined routes through the region, and that entire airspace is extremely compressed between the needs for the military to be operating and then the Reagan DCA airport being in proximity of all of that, which many have argued maybe that airport shouldn't even be there. But of course, being the nation's capital and adding so much convenience for our elected representatives, that airport has a lot of reason to be there. And but the mix is just very, very tight. And in this case, it appears the, you know, the aircraft, the regional jet, was assigned another runway on a visual approach. Visual approaches do not involve air traffic control providing guidance for the aircraft flight path.
Wait, let me take a step back there if I can, Captain. So the pilot is in the cockpit, and he's looking to land, right? So take me from that point. What happens? What does he do?
Well,
the air traffic control tower, et cetera?
So the controller offered a different runway, which is a bit more convenient for the pilot. They pull right into the terminal. It's a bit quicker, but it's also a bit shorter. And it's not an unusual thing for them to do. But the pilots now are on their own in terms of guidance. There's not air traffic control guiding them onto the final approach course and providing that kind of separation. Instead, they are just handing it off to the pilot to handle and manage their flight path, which in itself is not a huge problem. Although I should say that according to the Flight Safety Foundation, 40% of landing accidents have occurred during visual approaches. So it does increase some risk, but it's not, it's certainly manageable on its own. And
so why do they do that? Why does it go to visual only, and not, why does the air traffic controller, even though it's because it's an alternative runway, or why would the air traffic controller not be still be involved in it, I guess I'm asking?
Well, there's a few advantages from the standpoint of air traffic control. By having aircraft come in on a visual, they are now relieved of having to provide that guidance, and they can turn their attention to other traffic. So it enables the system to move through metal, more metal through the system than it could otherwise. It just, with the number of people involved, with the number of controllers involved, it expedites things and keeps things moving a little bit more smoothly, keeps things moving along, if you will.
Let me take a break. We'll pick it up here when we come back. I'm just trying to understand, you know, a lot of us, Captain, we sit in the plane and we don't know what the heck's going on.
Yeah.
We just turn it all over and we hope that everything works out all right. I want to ask you about the videos that have come out and what you've seen. And I don't know anything about flying at all, but it would seem as though, and I don't know what's sped up, I don't know what's not in this day and age, I don't know what's real and what's not, but it would seem as though one would have seen the other and would have somehow been able to take action, or maybe not, because, again, I don't know anything about flying, but you do, and that's why we're happy to have you. As we talk about the crash that happened last week, Shem Malmquist is our guest, visiting instructor at the Florida Institute of Technology, a pilot for over 35 years, so he knows what he's talking about. If you have any questions or comments, 504-260-1870. That's the Oakland Art Jeweler Talk and Text line. Now let's look at traffic on WWL. 825, Tommy Tucker, WWL. We're live here in Radio Row, New Orleans, Super Bowl Host Committee Media Center. And we are talking Super Bowl, but we wanted to follow up on the crash last week that happened with the helicopter and the commuter aircraft plunging into the Potomac. Shem Malmquist is our guest, visiting instructor at the Florida Institute of Technology and a pilot for over 35 years. Captain, I don't know, you know, one from the other, but when I look at the video, it's easy to presume that one or the other could have taken evasive action. Tell me why maybe what we're seeing is not necessarily the best thing to draw conclusions from, and what did you see when you saw that video? Because you've been a pilot for 35 years, you know, right?
Yeah, so a couple of things going on. So the regional jet is coming in, and they're aligning and turning in a left turn along the river edge, to line up with the final approach. And at that point on the approach, now, first of all, they're turning away from the direction where that helicopter is coming from. So the view of the helicopter is already going to be obstructed. Plus, at 300 feet or so on an approach, the pilots need to be concentrating on ensuring the airplane is aligned correctly, that it's at the right altitude, the right speed, the aircraft is ready to land, it's configured, the power is where it needs to be. The runway is a short one, so that's going to increase that attention to every little detail. The last thing that we're going to be looking for when you get close into the runway is other aircraft. We're presuming that area is free and clear. I mean, their birds are certainly a possibility, especially along a waterway, but other aircraft, that's really not something that we're expecting to see right at that moment. And at the same time, the military helicopter which was on a flight. They had an instructor, an experienced pilot who was flying the helicopter, but also with an instructor as well, with even more experience. And they're maneuvering, possibly using night vision goggles, which is pretty standard. I have not seen confirmation of that. Mm-hmm. But that can make it very difficult to spot another aircraft. And in this case, the air traffic control delegated authority for avoiding the regional jet to the helicopter. And also, the regional jet crew and the helicopter are talking on two different frequencies, and so they can't hear each other. And there's some national security reasons for that. But that aside, it creates a situation where the two aircraft are not, or certainly the regional jet is not necessarily aware, other than, and that, usually the controllers will tell you, there's other traffic maneuvering, or they'll even point out helicopters. If they have you in sight, they'll maintain visual separation. And once I hear that, I'm going to assume the helicopter knows what they're doing and is going to be avoiding the area. But I'm not even sure if that transmission was made in this case. Even if it was, it wouldn't have probably changed the outcome.
So,
and the helicopter, of course, says that they have visual separation.
So when it comes to the two jobs being performed by one controller, if they were both on visual approach, would that factor into this or not?
Well, certainly having one controller working was part of it. The other part is just procedurally, by delegating the authority for not just the arrival, but also separation of traffic to the aircraft, that, of course, relieves the controller of that responsibility so they can go on to doing other things they need to do. The main problem there is the assumption that the helicopter pilots saw the correct aircraft. They thought they did, but, our brains and visual systems are really good when you are walking in a forest or, in a wild environment. I mean, that's what, humans have been doing for, many thousands of years. We are not very well adapted to judging distances and objects when we're moving through the sky. We didn't evolve with wings. We don't have them. And our brains aren't very good at that. I mean, I imagine birds are better, honestly, as you'd expect, but we are not. And so it can make optical illusions occur where you can see something, especially on a clear night, and you might be spotting the wrong thing. There might be a brighter object in one space than another. And, it just makes it very, very challenging. And so to rely on visual separation, that's, I would argue, probably one of the weak links in the system.
So we have to go, and we only have a couple of seconds left. It seems to me like we have some events lining up here, a confluence of events that are leading to this. And I'll ask one question before I let you go, which is, if it were daytime, do you think this would have happened?
Less likely.
Okay.
It still could have, but it's less likely.
Thank you, Captain. Hope we get to talk to you again. Thank you, Captain Chim Malmquist, visiting instructor at the Florida Institute of Technology, pilot for over 35 years. We'll come back. We'll talk to Colin Arnold, Director of Homeland Security and Emergency Preparedness for New Orleans, about security precautions, what you need to know if you're going somewhere or trying to avoid something. Tommy Tucker live on Radio Row, the New Orleans Super Bowl Host Committee Media Center. It is brought to us by a lot of good people, and I'll tell you about that when we come back right now. Time for WWL First News.